Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Welcome one and all to the Storybox podcast, the place to be if you are a lover of stories. My name is Jay Fanton, former real estate agent now, living my purpose, sharing amazing stories from people all over the world. I'm grateful that you're here today. Now let's journey into the story box together and hear more about whose story will be unboxed today. Oh boy, have I got an episode for you all today. Back in 2016, my friends, I got into a sport called CrossFit. And the reason why I got into the sport in the first place was because I watched a documentary called The Fittest on Earth. And on that documentary featured a number of athletes that after I watched the documentary, I thought to myself, I need to actually speak to these people one day. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that I would ever have the opportunity to do such a thing. One of those people on the documentary was none other than Rich Froning, who is my guest today. Now, for those of you who don't know who the awesome Rich Froning is, he's a professional CrossFit athlete that has won the title of Fittest Man on Earth four times, with his places winning first in 2011, 2012, 2013, and 2014 in the Games. And he's also appeared in CrossFit Mayhem Freedom, which is his own CrossFit affiliate gym, in 2015, 2016, 2018, and 2019. And he also led CrossFit Mayhem Freedom to their first place finish in the team category in the CrossFit Games. He's not only been successful in the sport, he's also been a pioneer in making a living off the sport of CrossFit, one of the very first people to actually do that. He's won more than $1 million in prize money from the Games alone, just the four times that he's won. And he's accumulated significant sponsorships from brands like Reebok, Oakley, Rogue Fitness. He's got a book out as well. He's also had a movie made about him. He's got so many things that have happened for him because of his achievements. And he owes it really, and you're going to hear his real humility to this. He's a man of faith, and he really, really believes in what he preaches at the same time. So I know you guys are going to get a lot out of his story. It's very inspiring, very challenging, and in many ways, it's very, very motivating. And I got up at 3 a.m. in the morning for this one. I just needed to speak to him. Like, he was one of the very first people that I put down on my list of people to speak to, and he did not disappoint. Honestly, I have to say that. He's very down to earth. He's just an all-around great guy, and appreciate Rich and your time for making it for someone like myself and for really making a difference in the world as well. So you guys, if you do get something out of this episode, please do share it around to your friends and family members that might need to hear Rich's story, or they do know him and they do like him. I guarantee you this interview is nothing that you've ever heard before. It's new stuff and it's great content. So I hope you guys really enjoy it. Please leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts as well, or iTunes, whatever's easier for you. You can spend 30 seconds doing that. And it really goes a long way to building the Storybox community so we can really change more lives with amazing stories like Rich Froning's. So you guys know what time it is. I'm going to be quiet now because I think I've said enough. So let's dive into the Storybox and hear Rich Froning's story.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Appreciate you getting up nice and early. Your time local, 3:30 a.m. So,
It's an absolute honor, man. Really, I don't care what time of day it was. I just needed to speak to you.
Awesome.
That's the truth of it. Because, like I said to you before we started, you've been a real inspiration to me. Everything you're about, and what you've actually achieved in your life over the years, which is pretty incredible, and the way you go, do your attitude towards it. So just want to honor you and say thank you for that.
I appreciate it, man. Yeah, I just like to work out, really, if you're being completely honest.
But it's more the mentality that people, I guess, see. And then I guess hearing your interview with Lewis Howes as well and what you've been through too and your mindset through it all, I think that's a testament. But before we dive into everything that you've done, apart from just working out, I have one question.
I'm
asking people, which is, what does success look like to you?
Oh, man. Really, to me, honestly, success to me, if we look in 20, 30 years, if my kids say I have a good father or he's been a good dad, that's success to me. You know, what I'm doing for a profession, you know, I love what I get to do. I enjoy working out. I enjoy competing. All the people that we have around and part of the team. But if we're being completely honest, all that can go away at any moment. And I just want my kids to think that I was a good man. And, you know, my faith is a huge part of who I am. And so, you know, we're actually doing a little bit of a study on David, and he was known as a man after God's own heart. And so that's what I want people to say about me and what I want my kids to say about me. Because really, honestly, all that really matters to me is what my kids and my wife think of me. So that's success to me.
Where did this idea of success come from for you? Has it been sort of like this gradual thing over time, or was there like a catalyst moment somewhere?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, before I had kids, I didn't really care what my kids thought about me because I didn't have any. So, you know, it's just been my whole life has kind of, I guess, led me to, I guess, the career I'm in from the way I was raised from my parents. Just my parents are the two of the hardest working people I've ever met. Having a ton of, you know, first cousins that were super competitive, to, you know, having a high school baseball coach that was an incredible just motivator and, I guess, challenger, being a firefighter for years and then really just finding CrossFit, not necessarily on a whim, but just kind of, you know, finding it at the right time. It's just kind of the perfect storm of everything all coming together. Everybody wants to say, hey, what's the one thing that, you know, set you apart? And I can't really nail down one thing. It's kind of a perfect storm. And then, you know, like I said, my faith is a huge part of who I am and why I do what I do. And without that failure in 2010 of falling off the rope, I wouldn't be in the position I'm in any way, shape or form, just because it really made me recenter and refocus on who I was and what that actually meant to me and having a real faith instead of more of a religion, I guess.
Mm. I want to dive into the faith aspect for a moment, because I myself am a man of faith, brought up in a Christian home all my life.
Yeah.
I made a testament of faith when I was 5 years old and reaffirmed that testament when I was 10. So I know I've grown up with the essence of faith and what that actually means and the stories from the Bible. Learning from Christ's life and even David's life too. Funny story. We're actually, my mum and I were having a conversation about David the other day.
Yeah.
Just about how David was a man after God's own heart. And
You
look at, I guess, David's mindset facing Goliath and it's like facing the giants in your life. It's like you've done that, but with sport, with CrossFit, like, and I want to ask you, Rich, is, have you always been brought up in a Christian household, or where did this faith come from for you?
Yeah, for me, you know, honestly, I was brought up in a Christian home. My mom's side, my grandmother, Violet, she has a direct line to God. I'm pretty sure she talks to him on a regular basis. She's incredible. Both grandparents, very Christian, very faith driven. So my parents are the same way. My mom, you know, we went to church every Sunday. But for me growing up, it was more of something I had to do. You know, I read the Bible and I knew all the stories, but for me, it was more of this, like, I did it because I felt like if I didn't, I was going to be punished, either from my parents or from God. You know, I had this just, you know, God sits up on this throne and judges us and almost just fear that this is what I have to do type thing. And, you know, I feel like when I was 13, I had Christ in my life and asked him, you know, to come in my heart and was saved. But it's still this kind of like a more religion, more rules. And it wasn't my parents' fault or grandparents' fault. It was just, I think this is how I had interpreted it. And so in 10, when I, you know, was competing at the games and had kind of found this thing that gave me purpose in CrossFit and was pretty good at it. And people were starting to recognize me through that and coming so close to winning the games and then having that failure, pretty public failure of, I say losing the games and getting second. A lot of people were like, you know, you got second, nothing to be ashamed of. But it was a dark place for me and a hard place, hard thing for me to handle because I'd put so much of my self-worth in who I was in CrossFit, my performance. And, you know, there's, you know, you can attach that to anything in the world. You know, if anytime you're going to put yourself or put your worth in something worldly, it's always going to let you down. And so for me, it was a real eye opener. And luckily I had some really good group of people around that, you know, asked me some tough questions and, you know, had this accountability of, hey, you know, I had a buddy that said, hey, if you were to die today, would you go to heaven? And simple question. And I was like, yeah, of course. And then I started thinking about it and I was like, man, what if I, you know, like, am I living how Christ has called me to live? And so it was really a catalyst for me to really look at what faith meant to me and was it religion? Was it all these rules? And what did Jesus teach? And like I said, I'd read the stories when I'd skipped around the Bible when I needed something, but never really, hey, God, what am I supposed to do? What do you need from me? And really having a relationship. And so that's what I, you know, you can attach whatever you want or whatever definition, but to me, religion is rules and regulations and how you're supposed to, you know, the things you're supposed to do versus faith. And for me, faith is having a relationship with Christ and a relationship with God. And hey, you know, talking to God, not necessarily like I do one formal prayer, I guess you could say, every night before I go to bed, but I try to have an open line of communication throughout the day. And hey, God, thank you for this, you know, or hey, what am I supposed to do here? And just kind of listening and, you know, I've never heard an audible, you should do this from God, but I feel that nudge tug in my heart where I'm supposed to go, what I'm supposed to do. And I know what's right and wrong. And so for me, that faith was to like, or was to dive back in and read what Jesus said and what Jesus preached. And so that was huge for me in 2011. So I was baptized when I was 3 months old, I guess, because I was born Catholic. But when I started reading the Bible, I saw that Jesus was baptized when he was in his 30s. And so I decided at that time, so that was in 2011. So I was 24 at the time and was baptized again because I wanted to make that decision. I felt like the decision had been made for me when I was young to be baptized. And there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. But I wanted to make that decision and I wanted to be the one that, you know, committed my life to Christ. People want to say, well, are you saying just because you committed your life to Christ, you started winning the CrossFit games? And I wouldn't say that God stepped in or intervened, but it has allowed me to compete from a different place that I know my worth isn't in who I am in CrossFit. My worth is in who I am in Christ. And so, yeah, I'd say it's definitely helped me with how I compete. You know, I don't get, you know, obviously I'm still a competitor and I still hate losing. But I know, you know, I can separate myself from that if I need to. It's tough at times, you know, it's not something every day, it's a constant battle. You know, I can sit here and say, hey, you know, I never once have put my worth in CrossFit after that. And that would be a lie. It's hard and it's a battle every day, but you know, leaning on that faith and listening to where I'm being pulled or tugged, has helped for sure.
Mm. I have, quite a few questions from that. I appreciate you sharing. I was brought up in a very similar, you know, very structured, very regimented. You went to church on Sunday. It was kind of like you're spoon fed everything.
Yep.
So you weren't free to sort of make your own decisions.
Own decisions. Yep.
And I was just like very lost in a way. And so a couple of years ago, I made the decision to uproot myself and find really, okay, well, who is God? Where does he have a place in my life? Does he have a place in my life? And I ended up finding that for myself and ended up realizing that he is real and it's not a religion, it's a relationship. And that relationship is how it's my choice, how I want to grow that or how I want to just leave it as it is. And because God gave us ultimately free will to choose. And
exactly.
You know, I've always thought, you know, growing up, I was always taught the same thing, you know, God's on his throne judging us. So there's that fear associated with doing something wrong. And but that's not who God is at all.
Nope.
He's a righteous judge. And righteousness doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to reprimand you or brand you and you're going to be, you know, like in prison or in a dungeon. That's our choice to put ourselves there. For some for some reason, they've thought that's the case, like when we have a failure. But here's the amazing thing. In failure, God has allowed us to learn one of life's most greatest lessons, which is humility, which is knowing that we are human still. He created us for a high purpose, but to know that the moment we're too far above our britches, that he can just bring us back to a
bring place. Bring us right back down.
Yeah. And say, we can't do it alone. We need you in our life to help us, to give us strength. And you mentioned something there was pretty interesting, which is purpose, which I'll get to in a moment. But what I want to ask you, Rich, is has your faith ever been tested?
Yeah, for sure. My faith is tested on a daily basis. We have, I don't know, you see my hats, Into the Storm, and it's kind of our Froning Farms motto. But for me, you know, we're doing this, we do a podcast called Into the Storm as well. That's all biblical based. And right now we're studying, David. And so there's so many parallels in my life. I feel like David resonates with me just very well. For some reason, I'm not sure, not necessarily the David and Goliath stuff. I haven't even moved past that. We're kind of to the part where David and Saul are going back and forth, but just the fact that, you know, David had so many struggles and was so real, and so many storms that he weathered, you know, there's where, like I said, multiple times Saul tried to kill him. You know, David had only to this point done everything that Saul had asked and killed thousands and 10,000s. There's a whole, story in the Bible where, you know, the women are saying David or Saul has killed his thousands and David his 10,000s. And so Saul is just so fixated and so, you know, just doesn't want people to be jealous of David, really. And so there's just so many things. David is done everything right, but he's been tried to, he's been almost killed four times by Saul's spear. He's been given one of Saul's daughters only to be taken away. Saul has put him in the front lines to have him killed, essentially. And David just keeps surviving. And so David is a man after God's own heart. I say that to say there's so many struggles that we go through on a daily basis and so much adversity and really first world problems. But how many times if you draw more close to God or near to God in those times, you come out better on that adversity. The only time there's any real growth is during an adversity or during, you know, those storms. I'm working on, honestly, because it's so easy to draw near to God during those problems that even when things are good, I want to still be a man after God's own heart. Like I want to still be close to God, even when it's easy. You know, when it's easy, you kind of let your relationship lacks a little bit because you don't think you need him as much. You know, you think you're, oh, all right, well, everything, or you just kind of forget about it. Like everything's good. But when things are bad, that's when you ask for God and when you need his help. So it's, like I said, easier to be closer to God in those moments and say the right things. But if you're actually acting it out in those times of adversity, that's who I want to be. And that's what I want to be is not just talk it out, but actually live it out. If that makes sense.
It does. And I appreciate you sharing that. Like the example of David, I think is probably one of the best examples you can give. because I also like how, you know, David did fail, especially when he killed
all the time.
Yeah.
Uriah. Uriah.
Then I think that period of time he's sitting on and he's praying and he's not eating. He's just fasting and praying. And then when the child ends up dying, spoiler alert for those who don't know.
Right. Yeah.
he gets back up and he just goes about his normal day.
Right. And
I've always thought about that moment. Like he's in literally despair. He knows what he wants. He wants the child to live and God to spare the child. But really what I think that ultimately for him, he was his faith right there, even in the midst of that despair, he was still believing that God's will was going to be done regardless. And
it's so easy, for us to think that we know best. And if I was God, it would not be good. you know, he knows way more. And like I said, David, there's so many parallels to my life. Patience, David, you know, he was basically anointed king when he was a boy and he had multiple opportunities to kill Saul and never did because it wasn't God's time. And he waited for God. It's the whole story is pretty incredible that, you know, as many times as Saul tried to kill him, David didn't do it. And as many times as David had the opportunity to kill Saul, he didn't do it. And so there's so much that you can learn humble. I mean, David's probably one of the most humble people in the Bible, but he had the same shortcomings that all of us have and the same struggles, and he was human. But like I keep saying, I guess, is the fact that he was a man after God's own heart. You know, like I speak from thinking about, you know, my three kids and how amazing they are, and how all three of them are adopted. You know, 10, 15 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to say, you know, if you had told me I had three adopted kids, I don't know what I would have told you or how I would have felt about that. You know, I thought me and Hillary, when we first talked about having a family, we would have three biological children and then adopt one. And so when God was like, no, this is not the plan I have for you. It was hard, you know, it was a patience thing. But now to think back and think how incredible, you know, if my plan would have worked, I wouldn't have the three amazing kids that I have now. And so it's just incredible to think that, you know, for us, it was just such a dark time, going through that storm and going through that adversity and, you know, thinking that we knew what was best for our life. And then just the incredible stories of how we had our three, and you know, I won't go down those until, unless you want to talk about them later, but just, each one of them has their own incredible story of adversity and how, you know, at the time you're just not ready for it. But when you come through it on the other side, you're like, man, that's incredible. And my faith grew and our relationship with even me and my wife, grew. And then now we have these incredible kids and it's just, it's hard for me to, you know, when people want to argue if there's a God or not, I can't even entertain the thought of it. There not being a God, you know, when I see those three kids and how amazing their story is without just anything else in my life. If I was just to look at that, I'm like, yeah, there's a God.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, man, like I can't resonate or relate to the kids aspect, but I can relate to the fact that I shouldn't actually be here talking
to you.
But three times in my life. And when people say to me, oh, there is no God, I'm like, shut up. Because seriously, there is. And I don't care what you want to believe, like that's your prerogative, but for me, I 100% know, because without him I wouldn't be alive. And they say, oh, it's the doctors. No,
right?
Doctors said I was gonna die.
Really?
And there was three miracles. So like, if you don't believe in miracles, I'm a living proof.
Miracle, right? Yeah.
Seriously. That's awesome. Yeah. Like, I've got crazy stories, like insane. And I just look back on my life and I think, well, I'm blessed to be here. So when we talk about real faith and strengthening your faith, then I just share my story and say, if I can do it, then you can too.
Like, right.
The only thing that's stopping you from doing it is you.
Yep.
And
exactly.
And this. And
yep.
Which for is sure. Like one of the most difficult things to actually strengthen as well. Strengthen the mind, because you know the devil is very good at playing tricks on you. The mind is
always
desperately wicked.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. The body. Yep. Yep. So, the flesh. Flesh is weak.
100%, man. So what I want to ask you is, I mentioned earlier purpose and finding your purpose. What did you believe your purpose was growing up? Did you know what it was? Or
oh man. You know, I knew that I needed to compete in something, whatever that was. Like I just had, this is who I am. You know, so compete is definitely my nature. I'm protective. I'm part of a big family. So family was very high up on the priority level. You know, I went through, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a professional athlete. Baseball was kind of my thing. So that's where I wanted to go. And then my fallback was being a firefighter. You know, I had uncles that were firefighters. And so service is definitely in my nature, and either military or, like I said, fire. And so for me, it did turn into, you know, I played a little bit of college baseball, decided college baseball wasn't where I wanted to be. And then the fire department came from there. So, yeah. So I've always, I guess, kind of lived in what I thought I was supposed to do. I've never really had, I guess, a plan for my life. It was just kind of like, all right, God, show me the next thing you want me to do. And even when I was younger, like I said, even with that kind of religious mindset, it was still, all right, God, where do you want me to go? And I'll try to do what you're calling me to do. So, yeah, I feel like he just always kind of showed me what the next step was, and I was kind of open to it, and just kind of stepped into the next role or position or purpose that he had for me at the time.
Do you have any regrets at all in your life?
Oh yeah. Heck yeah. You know, there's multiple things that I wish I could go back and change, but I wouldn't go back and change, if that makes sense. Cause I wouldn't be who I am and wouldn't have learned from those things or moved forward from those things. You know, one big one is playing college baseball. I wish I would have stuck with it, and they ended up winning a national championship the year that I was there. So, you know, have a college national championship ring would have been nice, but wouldn't have met my wife, wouldn't have my kids, wouldn't be, you know, doing what I'm doing now. So, I can't say that I would go back and change that. There's things I definitely regret, but it wouldn't change any of them.
What would you say has been the biggest risk that you've ever taken?
Oh man. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline junkie, so you got to be careful when we say those. You know, like I've ridden a couple bulls, jumped out of an airplane a couple times. We built a street luge out of wood and skateboard trucks when I was a kid. Went down the mountain that we live on. But aside from those things, physical risks, I don't know. I guess, you know, kind of stepping out, owning our own business with Mayhem has been a big thing. Starting the farm has been a big risk. Honestly, you know, having kids is a risk. You know, I've always heard the term that basically your heart is outside your chest. And now I understand that, you know, like the love I have for those kids, and if anything happened to them, would be, you know, devastating. So, but to have, I guess, be willing to take that step and have the joy of how incredible they are. It's just, I can't really, it's hard to put into words until you have kids. And for me, it helped me understand my faith a lot more as well. You know, the term unconditional love and thinking about God in that way. There's nothing that I could love more on this planet than those kids. And, you know, they could do the meanest, rottenest thing ever, but turn around and say, I love you, Dad. And it's gone. So God loves us more than that. And so for me, that was hard to grasp, I guess, until I had kids. And now I completely understand it.
Mm. One question I've always wanted to ask you, Rich, is because is basically you've got this persona of being super fit. And for a lot of people, they would see that as quite being a man. So one of the questions that I have for you is, what do you believe being a real man is?
Shoot, that's a tough one, you know, especially in today's culture.
Mm.
You know, I think it's, I think of like things a man should be, I guess. Like a protector is definitely one, you know, somebody that is reliable, you know, Jim, who does our man mindset stuff. It says basically, you know, you think of a chair, like a well-built chair. It's an unforeseen conclusion that that chair is going to be stable when you sit on it. And that's what I think a man should be. And, I think that's what people should be really, but, us as men, we have a crisis, I think, in the world. You know, see all the stuff going on here in the U.S. I'm not sure, on the news, but it's just people, people can't talk anymore without being offended.
Yeah.
And we can't have discussions and disagree, you know, really it's, you know, it's okay to disagree and it's okay to, and have discussions.
Mm-hmm.
Without being offended. And I think that's part of being a man, but it's also part of being just a human being is, hey, we're not going to agree on things, but we can move past and maybe we can find some type of middle ground between us and make something work. And it's just tough, you know, like it's kind of a crazy spiral we're in right now. So I think that's the best way is to just be an example. And for us, you know, talking about faith, you know, men after God's own heart and being like Christ, I guess. And so people see that and, you know, you don't necessarily even have to tell everybody all the time, but just be that person. So they're asked, hey, what's different about that person? So you can kind of open those lines of conversation.
It's kind of like we're walking on eggshells a lot,
you know,
which is very frustrating, especially
because
like if you do say something that someone gets offended by, then you can be sued for all you're worth. And then the person would actually win. You got nothing. You got no leg to stand on. You know, it's sort of ridiculous how the world
is. Cancel culture.
Yeah. It's pretty stupid if you ask me, but that's, it's going to get worse before it gets good.
I know that's the scary part is you got to make sure that whatever you say is I guess polished and doesn't offend anybody.
I mean, even CrossFit has become more, it's changed a lot over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in recent times, it's kind of gotten worse in a way. Like it's not what it used to be. I mean, my favorite years were the years you were part of it and then 2016 and 2017. And then after that, it's sort of gone like, what's going on?
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. I don't know how
I'd say there's several people that agree with you on that. It's, you know, it's moving, I guess now, hopefully we'll see with the new changes at the top that, it'll move back to some of that stuff that all of us enjoyed for sure. More professionalism is really what it needs, but also still have that, you know, bit of fun to it.
Yeah. I know you got to be careful with,
tiptoeing.
Tiptoe. But what I do want to ask you, Rich, is what would you say is your greatest achievement?
Oh man. Yes. I mean, I keep coming back to it and poor Sap, you know, being sappy, but being a dad's pretty incredible. That's something, like I said, every day is something that I look forward to. And there's days it's a lot like my faith. There's days where I'm like, man, I crushed that. I did a really good job. And then there's other days where I'm like, man, I screwed that up. So you basically start from square one every day. And it's almost like your fitness rings. If you have an Apple Watch, you wake up the next morning and it's back to zero. So you're starting at zero every day and working towards something. You know, that's, the winning the games and those types of things, if we're talking about that way, I think actually my team championships are way more fun and way more rewarding than any of my individual ones, because you're part of something bigger, I guess. You know, and I had a group of people around me that helped me train, and, you know, people that were part of the crew when I was an individual. But on a team, it's just so much more fun when you can either elevate other people or be elevated by other people, but work together. You know, I grew up on a team sport or playing team sports. So for me, it's been way more fun and way more rewarding on a team.
Mm. And now you've got CrossFit Mayhem, which is on your shirt. Mm-hmm. It's pretty incredible.
Yep. Yep.
What has been the biggest lesson starting CrossFit Mayhem?
Oh man, having good people and having a good team around you, you know, not just physically with what we do at the games, but people around here doing all the behind the scenes and day-to-day stuff that may not be the, you know, the person in the limelight. Those people are really what makes everything go, and kind of, I guess, letting go a little bit and knowing that I can't, you know, spread myself too thin. So having a good team of people around you, one that you trust, but two that you can also get along with.
Mm. I've got a couple more questions for you, Rich, because I know your time is very valuable. This one's more of a fun one. What would you say has been the weirdest food combination you've ever tried, good or bad?
Oh man. So when was it, last year? It was last year. I think it was at the games. So I had made like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and then I threw some turkey on there. I don't know why, but it was actually surprisingly delicious.
Turkey. Okay.
Yeah. Turkey with, you know, peanut butter and jelly. So you get your carbs, your fat, your protein, trying to get it all in one. And it's at the games when you're competing, it's hard to eat. Your stomach, you just can't. Nerves are always just on high alert. So it was good. Surprisingly delicious.
So how do you manage that? Like at the games, because you can't really eat too much. So how do you manage that? Like, do you eat?
Over the years, it's gotten a little easier, I guess. Once I've kind of learned, you know, what's easier to consume, but it's fast stuff, you know, protein shakes are big, fruit, rice, kind of crappy food, to be honest, just because I need calories. So, you know, pizza over the years, we would eat some pizza. Yeah, it's just trying to make yourself eat even when you don't want to, because you're going to need it eventually. For the last couple of years, I've been doing intermittent fasting and along with RP strength. And so it's helped a ton just having somebody to be like, hey, this is what you need to eat based on what you've done or what you're, you know, going to have to do. So that's been great. And that's one thing that I've tried to clean up over the last couple of years is definitely my diet.
Would you say pizza is your favorite food?
No, not honestly. I like a good steak. my favorite food would be an apple pie.
Oh,
really like apple pie. A good steak, good ribeye or a filet, depending on the mood, you know, like ribeye, tomahawk steak. Bone in ribeye, pretty good.
Well done, medium rare.
Medium rare, you know, like a little bit crispy on the edges with the fat, but the center a little bit pinkish red.
Do you like Wagyu beef?
Yeah, I do. I've had a couple Wagyu steaks at a company over here. As far as beef goes, E3, they have some incredible meat, incredible steaks.
When you come to Sydney, I'll treat you to one of my favorite Wagyu beef places.
Deal.
Mr. Wagyu. Like,
okay. All right.
It melts in your mouth, because I'm not big on beef, but
right.
The beef that he has, it's
incredible.
Insanely good. Like,
I'm in.
It melts like butter, but it's like Succulent. Anyway, I'm getting off track and making me hungry.
I know. It's making me, I'm past my fast window. Got podcasts. That's why I got a shake here because I'm like, man, got to get something.
But what I want to ask you, Rich, is my last three questions for you.
Yep.
This is my legacy question that I love asking people at the end. You've been able to reach the age of 100 and your friends have put together a film for you of everything you've ever said and everything you've ever done. Then ask me how we'll just call it magic or to you on your 100th birthday. What do you want the film to say and to show about your life?
Yeah, like I said, kind of broken record, but definitely the family side of it. The man after God's own heart. I always joke that, you know, anytime I go to a funeral, I hate funerals. And I've had some people close to me that passed away either too young or I've been to way too many funerals. But I don't want it to be sad. I want, almost want a roast of just the funny things or the annoying things or whatever it was. I would rather my funeral be some type of celebration. One, because I'm definitely going to a better place. That's what I believe. But I don't want people to be sad. I want people to, I guess, remember the good things with the bad as well. You know, like I said, a roast is kind of where I'd rather it be. But yeah, I always come back to what those three kids think of me. And like I said, be a man after God's own heart, be David, not Saul, you know, not somebody that, was angry or jealous or, just callous. You know, I want to be remembered as, you know, we had fun, you know, whatever the circumstance was, that, you know, enjoyed life.
I love that, man. This one may be a hard one to answer, but we'll see how we go. I've left the best
to last. Let's do it.
If you could ask a question to anyone alive or dead, who would it be? Why? And what question would you ask them?
Oh man. I mean, you have to go with, if the easy answer is Jesus, but let's take Jesus out of the equation. Cause there's so many things that I would like to ask Jesus or God.
Yep.
Man, a living or dead. And what would you ask them? Man, that's a great one. So I'm a huge American football fan. My childhood hero is Barry Sanders. Anybody who doesn't know who that is, just YouTube him and you can watch why. One, I was a Detroit sports fan growing up and still am. I just want to know, like, he retired relatively young. I think I know the answer why, because the team that he was on is terrible and they wouldn't let him go. But what team would he have liked to have been on and would it have kept him playing? You know, like, I just want to know that for some, it's as trivial as that is. And surface level as that is, you know, we've been deep into the podcast. I got to know, you know, as a kid, I was devastated when he retired because he was literally my childhood hero. So yeah, I mean, and then if you go back to like, hey, who killed Kennedy would be cool. And then I was also a Dale Earnhardt fan. And so when he died, it's like, you kind of had a little bit of, I don't know, like, how did it happen or why did it happen? You know, like that type of deal. So, but yeah, the easy answer is who killed Kennedy. So, yeah. But I don't even know who we would ask that to. So who knows?
Exactly. Well, I actually asked Kennedy, who killed you?
That's right. I don't know if he did see it in the back of his. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
But I like this asking that question because I either get a profound answer.
Right. Or a surface level like me.
Simple answer, which is still good as well because.
Right.
But it's just as good. Sometimes we've got to know. Like,
right.
We just got to know. Like, it's not a
bad thing. Gotta know, man. You know, and like I said, we've been kind of deep this whole podcast. So figured that was a good fun one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. This one is, it may be a hard one as well, but we'll see how we go. What was the worst piece of advice you've ever been given?
The worst piece of advice, man. My dad, and he said, it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. It worked when I was a kid because I did that to him all the time, but not with my wife. It's never better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And I've tried to impart that wisdom on other younger married well, actually a buddy of ours, we were all going skydiving and he decided that he was going to tell his wife after, and he was going to ask for forgiveness and permission. And his wife tracked his phone to where we were at. And then we didn't even get to jump because of the weather. And so it was not a, it was not a good thing. So that is actually not good advice. It's not better to ask for forgiveness than permission in some circumstances, especially in marriage.
That is hilarious. I love it. I feel like that's a great way to sort of end our conversation. Rich Froning, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your story. We didn't even touch on really the family story aspect of things and the cross.
We can do that again. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to set up another one. And my wife has a book coming out about adoption. Oh. So we'd love to.
That's so good, man. Like, when's it coming out?
End of September. So September, I think 28th or 29th. It's incredible. She did an incredible job. She has an incredible heart for adoption and for anybody that's going through it. And so, I mean, it's obviously written from a woman's perspective. Mm-hmm. But there's so much, truth and value to it. If, any man that's going through it with a wife, because there's a lot of times I've stuck my foot in my mouth, and it would have been a whole lot better to have some type of resource to see how a woman thinks or processes some things. This is the best way to get inside a woman's head if you ever want to do that. So, but all jokes aside, she did an incredible job and she has an incredible heart for that and others going through that. So, yeah, maybe we'll set something up in the next couple of weeks and we'll talk the adoption thing.
I love to do that. Have you both on so we can get into the mind of both of you. See, I think that'd be such a profound episode.
That'd be great.
I have so many questions just from that. But anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks
so
much.
Thank you. Awesome, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I don't like this part because it means that sadly we have come to an end of yet another incredible story. I just want to say thank you to all of you for tuning in and listening to our guest today. It is my prayer that you would have felt inspired, motivated, challenged in some way, and that you would have learned something new as well. If you'd like to hear more amazing stories like this one, you can do so now by searching up the Story Box on any podcast platform. It's that easy. If you did get something from our guest today, please share it around to a friend or family member that you think could benefit from hearing this powerful story. And before you go, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It will only take 30 seconds and it will go towards reaching more people. Let's start changing lives through powerful stories like this one. Your support is greatly appreciated. Until next time, when we dive back into the Story Box, I'm Jay Phantom, and don't forget, your story is worth more than you know. I'll catch you next time.